Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Angela Franks, and we're going to be talking about her book, Margaret Sanger's Eugenic Legacy, The Control of Female Fertility. Angela, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Stan.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself? I know who you are, but why? Who are you, and why did you write a rather extensive book on Margaret Sanger? I mean, why is Margaret Sanger important? She's been dead for a long time.
That's exactly what Planned Parenthood keeps wanting to tell us, that she's not that important because she's been dead for so long. I became interested in Margaret Sanger actually in high school when my AP English my AP history textbook, which of course is a college textbook, had a two-page spread devoted to her, really canonizing her, praising her, talking about how great she was. And at the time, I had already been involved in the pro-life movement and was suspicious of this presentation. And so I began to research it. And what I found out is that she was a eugenicist. She was committed to eugenics. And at first, when I came back to this issue of sometime after college, I thought, well, maybe I'll write a few articles or produce something that could be helpful to people about understanding Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. And as I researched it, I realized it really was something that needed a full book-length treatment.
And I'm so glad you did it, because I don't have the time to do the research that you did. How long did you spend writing this book and getting all the information together and going through all of her papers and compiling all of the records that you have?
Well, it did take a long time, partly because I was in graduate school at the time, so I was supposed to be studying theology full-time, but instead I was also trying to research all of this. It took me about 7.5 years from initiating the book to actually seeing it in print, so it was a long, extensive project.
But doesn't it feel good when you finally get the book finished?
It's like giving birth. It's wonderful.
It really is. And, of course, the thing is, I think it's so important that this is one of the most important women of the 20th century, and her influence is still with us today. So, you know, this whole idea of eugenics, maybe people really don't understand what eugenics is and how it impacts on our society. Would you like to just perhaps touch on that before we go to the break?
Sure, that's very important. People often think that eugenics is something that was very common in around Nazi Germany and is no longer a problem today. And unfortunately, eugenics still exists. Eugenics is an ideology that judges people according to whether or not they have supposedly fit or unfit genes, and wants the fit people to have more children and unfit to have fewer children. Sanger herself mostly focused on ensuring that the so-called unfit would have few or no children. And that was intimately tied up with her whole program and with her founding of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America.
But, of course, she was the one who determined who was fit and who wasn't fit, wasn't she?
Exactly. There are very few people who determine that they themselves are unfit. Almost always we believe that we fall into the fit category, and she definitely believed that she was one of the fit who could determine who could and could not be having children.
But, of course, she believed in sex without reproduction and, really just having a good time, but not having any sense of responsibility for what you did.
That's right. Yeah, the whole free sex ideology was a significant part of her mindset. That's one reason she was promoting birth control, because she believed that women should have the ability to have as much sexual activity as they wanted with as many partners as they wanted without having the responsibility of children. And if you didn't believe that, she believed you were unfit by definition.
And, of course, today we have 65 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease.
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Angela Frank, and we're talking about her book, Margaret Sanger's Eugenic Legacy. And of course, Angela had spent some 7 years actually working on this book from the time she began, and she's done an exhaustive work of reading so many of Margaret Sanger's papers and books and articles, and really gives you tremendous insight into this woman who helped shape the America we live in today. And if you don't understand Margaret Sanger, even though she's long since dead, you can't understand so much of the thought process of what's taking place today. So what did you really learn, you know, after going through all of Margaret Sanger's papers and books and articles?
Well, as you said, fundamentally, I realized that this ideology that she promoted is not dead. And that's why we care so much about her. Planned Parenthood is the organization that she founded. We have the Planned Parenthood Federation of America and International Planned Parenthood Federation promoting this ideology abroad. And I believe that you still find a eugenic ideology within Planned Parenthood and within the population control movement as a whole, even though the people who profess these beliefs don't understand that they're actually eugenic beliefs. You don't have to personally believe that you're a eugenicist to still have these sort of deformed beliefs. And I think you see them all over the population control movement. So you see a real focus on reducing the number of children that the poor have all over the world in underdeveloped countries and in third world countries. And I think that this is part of the legacy that Margaret Sanger has left us.
And, of course, people don't understand that really population control is simply another name for eugenics. Would that be a fair statement?
It really is. It's very surprising to people to read, for example, all the standard historiography that's been done on eugenics. This is not a controversial claim at all within the literature that's out there looking at the eugenics movement. There was a Marxist and feminist historian who acknowledged that she said that the eugenics movement slid gracefully and imperceptibly into the population control movement, that there was no real difference between their goals and between their personnel. And if you look at the early population control groups, it's startling that all of the people running these organizations were famous eugenicists. They were people who were running the eugenics groups, they were publishing eugenics articles, they were actively involved in promoting the eugenics agenda, and population control, under the slogan of quality, not quantity, was how they believed they could promote eugenics all across the world.
Well, of course, eugenics got sort of a bad name from the Nazis, so they had to change the name of what they were doing.
That's right, and you see a strong
hold that thought right there for just a moment as we do that. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Angela Franks. We're talking about her book on Margaret Sanger, Margaret Sanger's Eugenic Legacy, and going into the background of this movement which started eugenics. They changed their name to population control because, well, certainly after we found out what the Nazis were doing and the name eugenics, a lot of people had a bad taste in their mouth. They didn't think it was nice incinerating people and killing children and targeting specific races. And when you stop and think of the number of people who died in the concentration camps as a direct result of Hitler's eugenic policies. But where did those eugenic policies come from? What was the relationship between Margaret Sanger and what happened in Hitler's Germany?
That's a very good question. It's very important to understand. One way that Planned Parenthood defends Margaret Sanger is by saying that she was not a Nazi. And historically, this is true. She was not at all on the right wing end of the political spectrum. She was much more a Marxist or an anarchist as far as her political beliefs. And so they try to put up a smokescreen and confuse the issue because they assume that most people believe that eugenics is simply Nazism. Nazism is one portion of the eugenics movement. And so there were many eugenicists who were also racist and were also Nazis and who were anti-Semitic, but not all eugenicists. And so there were many eugenicists who were actually Jewish and were not anti-Semitic, clearly. And so Sanger falls into that camp of eugenicists who were not out-and-out racist. She did not believe that race qualified you in and of itself as being unfit, quote-unquote. However, her eugenic policies and ideology adversely affect people of of minority races. So if you're targeting the poor, if you believe that the poor are essentially equivalent to the quote-unquote unfit, then you're going to adversely affect minority races because they tend to be more economically disadvantaged. And so what you have in Nazi Germany is the extreme effect of a racist form of eugenic ideology. But one thing you have in Nazi Germany, for example, is a very extreme sterilization law. Well, that the sterilization law that was passed in 1933 in Nazi Germany was actually written by an American. Fortunately, it was never passed in any one state in its totality. It was written by Harry Laughlin, and he was actually on Margaret Sanger's board. He was heavily involved with her birth control movement, very supportive of it. But it was actually an American legal idea that was then carried out in its fullest in Nazi Germany. And so there's definitely a continuity between what happened in Nazi Germany and what we did here in America. We sterilized over 63,000 persons under our involuntary eugenic sterilization laws.
You see, most Americans don't know that these eugenic laws really began here, and the Germans just sort of picked up on the idea, the great idea the Americans had had.
That's right. Eugenics is really an Anglo-American, so a British and American idea from the beginning, and it kind of passed on to the continent in Europe, so to Germany and other parts of Europe. And a lot of what they promoted in Germany had its origin here. Certainly eugenic sterilization was fundamentally an American idea. It was a big part of the American Eugenic Society's legislative program. And Sanger was in full support of forcible eugenic sterilization for the institutionalized and for anybody that she considered to be quote-unquote unfit. She said that possibly drastic and Spartan measures would be required to forcibly make people she considered to be unfit not have children if they wouldn't voluntarily use birth control.
Well, now, Chris, didn't she really want to sort of breed a better racehorse, using carrying that analogy over to human beings?
She frequently used these sort of agricultural analogies and applied them to human beings, which is a very common eugenic idea. So she talked about the fact that we should breed a race of thoroughbreds, and race in eugenic terminology frequently refers to just kind of the human race in general. We should have this, the human race should be a race of thoroughbreds. And she talks about the unfit being quote-unquote human weeds that clog up this little earth of ours that we have to protect ourselves from. She referred to some immigrants as being a cloud of locusts. And so she frequently used these dehumanizing analogies to speak about human beings, which of course we still see today in reference to people people who are disabled, people who are in comas or in vegetative states, or to the unborn. We always want to dehumanize the people that we want to dispose of.
Well, of course, they have lives that are really not worth living. They'd be a lot better off. Wouldn't they want to go to be with Jesus rather than being here on earth? They can always use a rationale, even appealing to the Christian morality. Wouldn't it be nice if they just could go home to be with Jesus and wouldn't have to suffer in their earthly status? But where do we get the problems with that? How do you counter an argument like that?
It's a real challenge in our society today because we really have imbibed the eugenic mindset regarding persons with disabilities. There was a poll that came out soon after the Terri Schiavo case, soon after her death, in which people were asked if the Supreme Court had an obligation to protect the rights of various groups of people. And if they asked if they had the obligation to protect the rights of racial minorities, the response was very positive, very high, yes. And when asked if the court had an obligation to protect the rights of persons with disabilities, the response was much lower. And so clearly we have a real problem where we don't fully believe that persons with disabilities, persons in various levels of consciousness, are really human. And that's a eugenic mindset. It's that old Nazi trope that there's lives not worth living. And I think one way to challenge that is to point out, we're all probably going to be diseased or disabled at some point in our life. And do we really believe that we ourselves will be less valuable as human beings, that we'll be less, our lives will be less worthy, that we should somehow just be disposed of as though we're sort of used Kleenex and just because we can't earn a living anymore and have deep conversations? And so, yeah, I think that's a very important challenge for any concerned person who's concerned about human rights in today's society.
Well, I had an interesting experience recently. I was asked to appear on a very, very liberal program in Los Angeles, a 100,000-watt FM station, the largest FM station in the Los Angeles basin, which just happens to be run by some very liberal New Age people. And this woman was going over this issue of Terri Schiavo again and again. Well, why do you want to keep her alive? Why do you want to force her to be alive? And I finally said, well, you know, if you ask me, you know, from a purely utilitarian point of view, I can understand your position. But what about God? I mean, don't you think maybe it's up to God to determine whether they would live or die? Why is it that you want her dead? I thought this poor woman was going to have a stroke. And mentioning God, you know, and the fact that maybe God would be the one who would decide when people live or die, and that she didn't have a right to make that decision for Terri, it really got so embarrassing. Later she called to apologize for almost shouting at me. Anyway, and I think this is the real issue. I mean, how do we address these problems from a purely moral point of view? And I don't think you can exclude the concept of God. People want to argue with that if you don't bring up God, but I don't think you can you?
Well, it's very interesting what you say about this mindset. There's no doubt that the eugenic mindset is one of playing God, and that percolates throughout society. And so again, people who this woman you're talking to would probably have a stroke if you suggested she was eugenicist, but this idea that we have the ability to make a quality of life judgment on somebody else and to determine if they're worthy of living or not is really a supreme arrogance, and it really is playing God. In some situations it might not be prudent to point that out, perhaps, I don't know, but I think that we can't forget that sort of morality that believes that we as human beings have a right to do that has always led to problems in the past. We have always had cases where people want to determine who can live and who dies. That's what dictators do. That's what the Nazis did. That's what slave owners did, really, that they could treat their human slaves as property. And there's never been a good result from that sort of moral stance.
And now, what about International Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger's organization? What about their relationship to the one-child policy in China?
Oh, that's a very good question. IPPF itself has an affiliate, the Chinese Family Planning Association, I believe it is, in China, that is officially affiliated with them. And they provide money and all the support that they provide to their other affiliates, also to this Chinese organization.
You mean IPP, the International Planned Parenthood?
The International Planned Parenthood Federation.
And which until recently was funded with our tax money, wasn't it?
Yes. And the reason that it's no longer funded with our tax money is because we have a pro-life president. And that's one of the very important things that pro-life executives can do in our system, is that they can make a determination that we're not going to provide money to organizations, in this case, organizations that provide abortion. That's why IPPF was defunded. The organization that really has dirty hands in China is the United Nations Population Fund. And they were recently also defunded by our money under something called the Kemp-Kasten Amendment, which says that we will not give money to organizations that engage in coercive family planning or population control abroad. And there's no doubt, of course, that the Chinese policy is coercive. Now, under Clinton, for some reason, it wasn't coercive. You know, the Clinton officials looked at the Chinese policy, the IPPF and UNFPA, and said, nope, no coercion here. But once we had a pro-life president in who could look at the facts objectively and really make a judgment based on what was really happening, we were able, again, to defund the United Nations Population Fund. And so our tax dollars no longer go to promoting this horribly oppressive program in China.
And what was Margaret Sanger's attitude towards blacks? Did she have a target them specifically, or was it simply people of lower economic stature?
It's really the latter. I haven't been able to find a statement where it seems that she's really targeting the blacks as blacks for being unfit. She has a statement in one of her letters where she says, there was a project in the early 1930s with her organization that was going to focus on bringing birth control to blacks.
Wasn't it called the Negro Project?
That's right, the Negro Project. And some people look at this one letter that she wrote to one of her coworkers in which she said, we don't want the word to get out that we are trying to exterminate the Negro race. And they take, some people take this as meaning that they really were trying to exterminate the Negro race and they were, you know, trying to prevent this from happening.
Hold that thought.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. The secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large, until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs, in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Angela Franks. We're talking about Margaret Sanger, and Angela really read through. How many of her letters and her articles did you read?
Oh, I should have kept count, but I didn't. I looked at about 20 different manuscript sources, so different collections of letters to find her letters and those who were connected with her.
All right, fine. So she was a prolific writer and really had a profound impact on the world in which we live today. Now, as far as her attitude, did you get anything at all about her attitude towards theosophy and some of the occult sciences that were so prevalent, during the early years of her work?
That's a very good question. The poor woman was really very sad. It was hard, I think, for her to really find a spiritually fulfilling life, given the kind of life she was leading with multiple lovers and not really any rootedness in her family. So I think that she, out of this emptiness, went searching for sort of spiritual happiness. And one way that she did that was through dabbling in the occult, as you mentioned. She had a daughter who died quite young. And in part, I think she, Sanger, felt responsible for her death in some ways because her children were really in many ways neglected. And so she would try to make contact with her daughter through seances and so forth. And it was really actually very sad because here's a mother who felt very guilty and grieving for the death of one of her children and yet was promoting a whole lifestyle that is inimical to children and really was pursuing her own her own pleasures over the well-being of her children.
Well, now, of course, she had a profound impact, though, on thought. In fact, at one time, wasn't she actually convicted of criminal activity for pushing abortion and then, or encouraging abortion? What was that all about?
She first initiated Planned Parenthood. It wasn't called that, but it was an early form of Planned Parenthood in 1916. And what she did was to open up a birth control clinic, which was illegal at the time, in Brooklyn, New York, and she, of course, singled out a poor immigrant community because these are the people that she really believed needed to have birth control. And so she was promptly jailed for that and actually enabled her whole project to really get off the ground because of the publicity that this caused. As far as abortion, she did not want to really publicly take a position on it. It's very clear from her letters and also from what her clinic was doing that she was supportive of abortion. Her clinic referred some women for abortions quietly, of course, because it was very much illegal. So there was certainly that going on within her clinic, and it was very clear from her letters that she was in support of it. Publicly, she tried hard to separate what she was doing and promoting birth control from abortion because she knew that there was, as much as people objected to birth control, there was a far stronger even moral objection to abortion.
Well, of course, at that time, everybody felt that it was murder. I mean, you were murdering an unborn child. It's amazing how the thought process of the American people has changed since then, at least with so many people.
That's right. It's very interesting to read the writings of all of the early suffragists on this. To a woman, they opposed abortion. They believed that abortion was a sign that women were not receiving the support that they needed. They called it child murder and infanticide. Susan B. Anthony called it infanticide. Sanger, in many ways, was unusual for being so accepting of abortion, but it had to do with the fact that she really viewed liberation for women in sexual terms and not in legal and political and economic terms the way that most of the suffragettes did.
And, of course, really, of course, what we've seen now with women's liberation is so many women today with children and single mothers struggling just to get by. Women's liberation has not really liberated them at all. In many ways, it's made their life far worse, hasn't it?
Yeah, one of the cases that I make in the book is that feminism, if you compare what feminism stood for in the time, say, of the suffragettes, you had a far stronger view of the dignity of the woman and of the way that men needed to treat women. And with Sanger, I think you really get what I call sort of eugenic poisoning of this vision. And feminism became the right of women to engage in as much sexual activity as men, which is hardly liberating for either the men or the women involved, and certainly not for any of the children that might result from that kind of attitude.
And now, of course, we want to send our women overseas to fight in combat and all sorts of things that just were unthinkable, you know, back there in the early part of the 1900s when Margaret Sanger was campaigning to change our attitude and women's attitude towards life and liberation. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two here at Radio Liberty, and we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 50. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Angela Frank, and we're talking about her book, Margaret Sanger, Eugenic Legacy. And how can people get your book? How can they get your website?
Well, my website is angelafranks.com, angelafranks.com. The book is also available in all the major online bookstores, Margaret Sanger's Eugenic Legacy, or they can visit my publisher at mcfarlandpub.com.
All right, fine. And so you can go to Angela's website at www.angelafranks.com. Or your publisher again is?
McFarlandPub.com.
All right, McFarlandPub.com. Well, you know, of course, I think Margaret Sanger is probably the most significant woman of the last century. Would you agree to that as far as her impact on our society?
I would definitely agree with that. I think that she is not given sufficient attention for being as important as she really is. When you read histories of eugenics, they'll refer to her occasionally and talk about the fact that she was eugenicist. But I think that the reason we know her name and we don't know the name of the other eugenicists that were running around in the 1920s, people like Frederick Osborne and Harry Laughlin, we don't know their names. We know Margaret Sanger because she succeeded where they failed. She really enabled eugenics to be a living ideology by translating it into population control, by really giving it an institution that would perpetuate it. And I think she's had the most deleterious effect of just about any woman from the 20th century.
Well, now you have a chapter that talks about money means power. The rich have their say. And, of course, where are you really going with that? Aren't you simply pointing out that some very, very powerful people were actually financing this whole population control movement?
That's right. We frequently have the misunderstanding that, say, the poor people of India really want the quote-unquote services that International Planned Parenthood provides for them, and that's why IPPF is there in India. And all of this is really a myth. The reason that we have these population control groups and the reason that we had eugenics groups that were able to survive even after World War II is because we had a handful of extremely wealthy supporters that funded these organizations. And that's still the case today. The National Right to Life Committee, say, gets the majority of its donations from people like you and me. The majority of their donations are maybe $20 or under. Well, groups like Planned Parenthood and the National Abortion Rights Action League and so forth, these groups get their money from foundations. They get a few donations from extremely wealthy people. And that's always how it's been.
Now, of course, you point out that the Swedes have been pushing this idea of eugenics for a long period of time, and they've sterilized an awful lot of people against their will forcibly, haven't they?
That's right. In many ways, Sweden beat us to the population control funding game. The Swedish government was funding population control in third world countries long before anybody else. But, of course, as you mentioned, one of the things that Sweden and the other Scandinavian countries were also doing was sterilizing people against their will. They weren't quite as efficient at it as, say, in Nazi Germany, but they were doing it over a long period of time.
And, of course, the thing is that this is not just in America, but this is sort of a worldwide process. In fact, in China today, I understand that they forcibly sterilize women after they've had, you know, if they've had a second abortion, they're forced to have an abortion, and they just force them to be sterilized many times?
That's right. There's a lot of evidence of forced sterilization and also forced IUD insertion in China for women that are determined to be non-compliant, quote-unquote, with the population control policies. In the local officers are given the responsibility of keeping track of women who have had children and determining that they do not have more pregnancies. And if pregnancies are discovered, then those women will be given forced abortions. If they won't agree to it, their relatives will be attacked. You know, if the women try to hide, then the government, the local governments will go after their relatives. They'll tear down their houses. The fines are just enormous that are levied against women who are resistant to this policy. It's a very coercive and very dangerous policy.
Well, I thought that Planned Parenthood was all in favor of choice. That's what they talk about. We're pro-choice, except when you get to China, and then, of course, we support what the government does. So, you know, it seems like they have a double standard.
It's always been a real irony that this slogan of being pro-choice took off within the Planned Parenthood and population control movement, because, of course, they've never been pro-choice. If you look at the history of the population control movement, in the 1960s and 70s, people were still saying out and out explicitly that, you know, we should have forcible two-child policies essentially all over the world. And this was not at all unusual. Alan Guttmacher, who was president of Planned Parenthood from the 1960s through about 1974, would say, well, you know, India should give a sterilization bonus to anybody who would agree to be sterilized because that's just how they need to take care of their problem. And this idea that they're pro-choice is really pretty laughable because there's really only one choice. As a illustration of that, these days, Planned Parenthood, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, performs almost 245,000 abortions a year. That's about almost 20% of America's abortions. And in the same year, in 2003, they referred out fewer than 1,775 women for adoptions. So So they're performing almost 250,000 abortions and not even 2,000 adoption referrals. So it's very clear where Planned Parenthood believes women should be choosing.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 831-464-8295. That's 831-464-8295. If you have a question, you have a comment, I think this is really such an important issue. Because there, in my estimation, there really is a eugenic, which of course I refer to as a genocidal agenda out there, and there really are people who really believe there are far too many people in the world. And of course, one way to get rid of them is to keep them from being born by one means or another. And poor old Indira Gandhi, the Prime Minister of India, got into terrible trouble. In fact, she lost her whole political career just because they were rounding up men and forcing them to have their brass dembrans tied there. Forcing men to be sterilized, and a lot of men who didn't like that idea of forced sterilization. It seemed to be not so worried about forced sterilization for women, but the men really got angry, and that ended her career in India.
It's one of the only cases where the population control ideology was directed towards men in a forced sterilization campaign. And yes, it ended her political career, and it was apparently terrible. Men, you know, they were unsanitary conditions. Men were dying as a result of the operations. They were being essentially either bribed or forced into these operations. It was a terrible idea. But we're much more accepting of forced sterilization campaigns against women. There was one just recently in Peru, and the end of the 1990s. It came out in full, mostly after the president had the name of Fujimori, mostly after his government had collapsed. And then they really investigated and determined it was over 200,000 women in Peru, which is a country of about 20 million people. It's not that many people. And they sterilized huge numbers of people, mostly minority Indian women up in the mountains. They just went after them and coerced them into sterilization.
And of course, didn't they get a lot of help from our government on that program?
There was the evidence that there were organizations from the United States that were involved, including USAID, which is the United States Agency for International Development. This was during the Clinton years, by and large, and the agenda of USAID was still extremely oriented around population control and very supportive of abortion. And there were also organizations, non-governmental organizations, NGOs from America, that were providing training for that campaign in Peru. So it really, America has such a possibility to be an influence for either good or for evil in the world. And that's one reason why it's so important that our president be pro-life, because all of these organizations that operate under the executive power of the president can be directed towards very good things or towards very evil things, towards promoting these horrible coercive population control programs in other countries around the world.
All right, fine. Of course, right now we've got Ken calling from Seal Beach. Hi, Ken. Hi. Did you have a question for our guest?
Comment and a quick question. In Margaret Sanger's 1938 autobiography, she stated that she spoke before the women of the Ku Klux Klan, and she further stated that when she spoke, she always started her speeches by saying, "I am a white supremacist," and they cheered her. I'm sure you're aware of that.
I think that's a misquote. She saying directly that she was a white supremacist is not present in her writings. She, however, clearly targeted the poor, and that's a real problem when she's saying that that a whole class of American society is quote unquote unfit.
Well, wait a minute, but why in her autobiography did she admit that she spoke before the KKK?
What was the name of her autobiography? Do you recall?
Yeah, it was called, and I think it was called Margaret Sanger, an autobiography, 1938.
Did you have a chance to look at that, Angela?
Yes, of course.
You can't deny it, she admitted it.
All right, well, if Angela doesn't recall that, so I guess we'll just have to pass that. Did you have a question for her?
No, that's basically it.
All right, fine. Well, I'm going to have to get a copy of that. I didn't realize that we had an autobiography. Okay, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
All right, fine. This claim that she then really said she was white supremacist.
That claim is out there. However, it's not. She doesn't say something like that in so many words. She certainly spoke before all kinds of undesirable eugenic organizations.
Well, of course, the Ku Klux Klan would hardly be considered eugenic. It would be considered racist, but hardly eugenic.
That's right. No, she certainly would speak wherever she could find an audience. But I don't think that the claim that she said she was a white supremacist is simply not accurate.
Is her book still in print, you know?
The autobiography, I don't believe it has been reprinted. She has. There's two different editions of it. There's one from 38 and then one from another year, and I can't remember the exact year, so I won't try to recall. And you can find excerpts from them. A set of her papers is being reproduced, and they might reprint part of that in one of the volumes that hasn't yet been reprinted.
All right, fine. Well, let's see. We have... if you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And certainly our guest is Angela Franks. And she has read, of course, a tremendous amount of the material that was put out by Margaret Sanger and her papers and the various things she wrote. Now, what about the relationship between her organization and the Nazi movement? Some people feel that there was a relationship between her birth control, initial birth control organization, and some of the Nazis. Did you run into that at all?
Well, there's no doubt that people that she worked with were connected to and supportive of the Nazi regime. She herself made very negative statements about Hitler. Again, she was on the left-wing side of the political spectrum and not really on the right-wing side. But, for example, Harry Laughlin, as I mentioned before, wrote the model sterilization law for the Nazis. In the 1930s, there was an article by a book review that was printed by one of the Nazi theorists in the Birth Control Review, which was the journal that she founded. By the 1930s, she wasn't editing it anymore, so it's more reflective of the viewpoints of the people who were running the journal at that time, and it indicates how much there was support of this sort of movement within the birth control organizations.
Was that Ernst Rudin that you're speaking of?
Excuse me?
Was that Ernst Rudin that wrote the article?
That's correct, yeah. Oh. That appeared after... You know, she retired from the journal in 1928. There's an organizational squabble, and that was it was being run by at that point in time by somebody else. But there was also another person within her organization, Lothrop Stoddard, who was an extremely well-known racist at the time. And they tolerated these kinds of points of views. Even if she herself didn't make statements that are directly racist, there's no doubt that she did not criticize people within her organization who did. So Lothrop Stoddard wrote this a notorious book that was a bestseller in the 1920s, The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy. And she allowed him to serve on her national council, which was sort of a 12-member executive committee of the American Birth Control League. You know, here she was not criticizing extremely undesirable racist viewpoints. And so I think that when Planned Parenthood says, well, she herself didn't make racist statements, and I think that's historically probably the case, yet she endorsed the whole viewpoint that would lead to the worst kind of extremes of racism, to the worst kind of things like Nazism. So there's not a direct connection between her personal between herself and the Nazi movement, but it's very clear that she's responsible for the same kind of ideology, for promoting the same kind of ideology that can lead to Nazism very easily.
Well, after you've spent all of this time reading and studying and then ultimately writing a book on Margaret Sanger, what do you think her influence is on the America we live in today? What would her legacy be for the year 2005?
Well, I talk about the title of the book is Margaret Sanger's Eugenic Legacy, and I really believe that's summarized in the subtitle, which is The Control of Female Fertility. I think that Sanger bequeathed us an ideology that believes that female fertility must be controlled at any price in order for women to be free and in order for society to prosper. And I think that's how she tied together these various elements of control, eugenic control, birth control, population control. They were all meant to promote the well-being of women and of society, but only at the price of women sacrificing their fertility. And I think that that's an extremely misguided view of women. I think it harms women. It doesn't help them. I think that you see the fruits of that kind of viewpoint in things like the Chinese one-child policy that targets women's fertility and views it as a threat to the entire nation. I think this only scapegoats women's bodies as opposed to celebrating what the female body and the powers of fertility that the female body has. And so I believe that her eugenic legacy is, first of all, in the corruption of feminism and in a corruption of how we view women. I think it's secondly in the promotion and institutionalization of population control. I think that we have, in population control, we have the continuation of eugenics today. That's the popular form of eugenics. Quality, not quantity, was always the slogan. And lastly, I think we have eugenic viewpoint of the poor and of the disabled.
And, of course, what really bothers me is there is an elitist idea that the elite should reproduce and us common folks should not be allowed to. And there really is this mentality that says that we should have certain people that should have as many children as they want to. We want to encourage that. And then the common folks should be sterilized or limited as far as their ability to reproduce. And, well, I certainly don't approve of that at all. I think that this, you carry it far enough and you end up as you did in Nazi Germany. Angela, thank you for writing the book. We will have you on one more of our programs. We're looking forward to it. I learn every time I have you as a guest.
Thank you very much, Dr. Smith.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam and Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Well,
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we hope that many of you will want to understand that there is a population control, genocidal agenda out there. We have a four-tape set on population control that goes into so many of the myths of what's happened. The outlawing of DDT, which has killed 100 million people throughout the world since 1973, when America decided that we were going to restrict the use of DDT, not because it was harming the eggshells, because the studies were all contrived, or killing the birds, but because it was saving so many lives. You need to get our four-tape set on population control. You need to get our video on population control. You need to get my monograph on population control, and it's available up on our website at radioliberty.com. But if you buy any of our products, and you can simply ask for it and ask for one free, we'll send it to you. If you buy one of the other products, that's the Population Control Agenda monograph, which will give you an excellent overview on the fact that there are really people out there who want to kill off the majority of the world population. If you have not yet seen our sustainable development syllabus, the pictures of the Georgia Guidestones, the story of the Georgia Guidestones, where they're engraved in stone is the Ten Commandments that come from the very pit of hell, and point one is maintain the world population at 500 million. In constant balance with nature. Nobody knows who put up the money. Nobody knows where the secret society was that Mr. R.C. Christian, but that wasn't really his name, Mr. R.C. Christian, who put up the money, said he belonged to a secret society, but nobody knows who he really was, because that wasn't his name. And nobody knows who the secret society was. But a monument is still there. It's known as the American Stonehenge, the Georgia Guidestones. And it's a center for occult and satanic ceremonies to this very day. And the fact that most people have never heard of it is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. And you'll find information on it on my webpage. You'll see the pictures of the Georgia Guidestones, or we hope, of course, many of you want to get our sustainable development syllabus. You need to have the information. You need to have the documentation. You need us to help get the truth out across America while there's still time. You need to get our four tapes set on genocide. You need to get our four tapes set on why do we still have cancer. You need to get our four tapes set on Dr. Brzezinski, the Brzezinski Breakthrough, and the book on Dr. Brzezinski. He has a treatment for cancer, and the FDA has done everything they could to suppress it and to send him to prison. Why would they do that? If he can help people and save little children with brain tumors, why would anybody want children to suffer and die unnecessarily? You so much material Radio Liberty has. If you haven't read yet the book entitled Evidence of Harm, the story of how the CDC has been complicit in creating autism. 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality or behavioral abnormality, and the CDC has known all along it was related to the thimerosal, because they've been collecting the statistics on it, and they won't let anybody see the statistics. This is an amazing book, Evidence of Harm. You need to get our four tape sets on mercury. We have two of them, actually. You need to get our four tape set on autism and understand there really are wicked and evil people at the highest echelons of government who want to hurt children. And people say, who would want to hurt children? What do you mean they don't want to hurt children? I mean, we've already killed 50 million unborn children here in this America. We're still committing partial birth abortion. We finance the murder of hundreds of millions of children throughout the world. Why should you be surprised that that same sort of thing would happen here in America? Or they would put fluoride in the water to harm the minds of our children, that encourage our children to eat aspartame, which produces pathological obesity, that's NutraSweet, or that they'd put mercury in the vaccines, knowing full well it would, at least in a certain number of the children, would produce autism and metal deficiency, and in the elderly produce Alzheimer's disease. Are these things true? You need to get our video, None Dare Call It Genocide. That's a video, None Dare Call It Genocide. You need to pray for America. You need to pray for a revival for our leaders and ministers. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.